Hello and welcome to a very, very special episode of Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I am Chris Austin, and the reason this is a very special episode is because we have a very special guest. And that guest is the director of multiple acclaimed and award-winning documentary films, including the latest documentary movie, Getting Lost, a film that dives into the phenomenon, legacy, and lasting impact of the hit TV show Lost, with this year marking its 20th anniversary, making its UK premiere at the Phoenix Cinema on 2nd of November. And that director's name is Taylor Morden. Welcome, Taylor.
Hello, thanks for having me.
A massive, massive pleasure to have you. Also joining me today is my co-host Luke Parker and composer of the podcast, Stefan Krieger. Welcome both.
Hello.
Great to be back.
Hello, hello. Now, excluding Taylor, two out of three of us on this call are major Lost fans. I'm one of them. Steph?
I am also another, yes.
Now, I revealed a few episodes ago that Stefan is my younger brother, so I'd like to think I'm partially responsible for your exposure to the show.
Would you? I would say that you are. I'd agree with that.
Agree with that? And Luke,
I'm in the process. I haven't quite finished it yet, you know.
It's a big
commitment, and I'm getting there. I'm getting
it
there.
It certainly is. Well, now that Taylor's on the call, I'm going to put you on the spot, because you mentioned the other day that you hadn't finished it, right? Any particular reason?
Oh, you know, life gets in the way. And, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not great with TV shows in general. You know, I'm quite bad in that I tend to get like halfway through or like a season in and then drop it and just never end up coming back to it. Not necessarily because I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, I get onto other things, and that's kind of what happened with Lost, I'd say.
Okay. Yeah. How far did you get?
Like halfway through season three.
Ooh.
I'd say. I got to the point where the questions just kept on coming and I needed some answers. And I think that's kind of what moved me away from it a bit. But that's not to say that I'll never go back to it, because I am super curious to see what happens.
Well,
you are at the exact spot where most people gave up on the show. When it was on TV in real time. You're also at the spot where the people making the show were also fed up because they didn't know how long the show had to go, and so they couldn't answer anything. So right in the middle of season three is when they were able to negotiate with the network an end date, and the remaining episodes that you have are some of the best. You know, the end of season three to the end of the show is – way faster paced, way more answers, still more questions, but it's
like, oh, yeah.
Your experience with streaming it now is so similar to the way people watched it back in, 2006 was season three. So people were dropping like flies because they couldn't answer any questions.
Mm. Yeah. So really you stopped at the best possible point.
Right.
It can only get better from here.
Exactly.
But I have to say, the reason I'm so excited to be talking with you about this film, Taylor, is that for me, Lost is the best thing ever made in any filmed medium, TV or movie. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And it genuinely changed my life. It did. I watched it at a crossroads in my life where I was as lost as the characters due to a personal tragedy. And not sure whether to take the plunge and devote my life to acting and writing and creativity or not. And this show propelled me to do that and reinforced my own feelings of faith and belief in something bigger than myself. So all to say, I feel like I'm in good company. But I'll start off by asking, and guys, please feel free to jump in with any burning questions you may have. But this documentary seems to me like a project that can only be undertaken by a Lost super fan. Is that how you would describe yourself?
Yeah, I definitely am a Lost super fan. I've had, just like I can see in the background of your frame, a framed Lost poster. I have had framed Lost art on my wall since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
We're the same in that way. But yeah, the spark for it was in 2010. For my birthday, my wife got me a trip to Hawaii because Lost was my favorite show. And I managed to, through the help of some sneaky Lost fans who knew where they were filming, I managed to walk onto the set and meet some of the cast and some of the crew.
What?
Because in Hawaii, they can't keep you off the beaches. All beaches are public.
Oh,
so they can ask you not to, but they can't actually stop you. Right? There's a PA standing on the beach saying, no, don't go this way. But there's nothing they can do. And this was way before I was ever a filmmaker. I was a struggling musician. I wanted to be in a band. I was doing that. I was in college. And just seeing how TV shows were made and meeting these actors and these crew people. And, you know, I got to go to the season 6 premiere in the VIP section with the cast and crew, sitting next to Sawyer's stunt double, watching the season 6 premiere on the beach in Hawaii. And it, like, that whole experience changed my life, not just because of that, you know, seeing how the show was made, but also met all of these dedicated Lost fans who had traveled from around the world to be there, which was, you know, I had listened to their podcasts and read their blogs and been on the message boards, but it was the first time I met, like, internet people in real life. I met a few at Comic-Con the year before for the Lost panel, because I'm one of you.
Yeah.
I'm a diehard Lost fan. But that really, meeting those people and seeing how much it impacted real people's lives, just like you said, is what stuck with me all these years. And then when I got into documentary filmmaking, I always had this itch in the back of my brain of, like, that thing about Lost, it's so different than other TV shows, than movies, than anything, the way it affected people. And nobody talks about it. Right. We were in that period after Lost ended where people were just making fun of it. Oh, the ending sucked. Oh, the show, you know, what a waste of 6 years, blah, blah, blah. And so no one was talking about, you know, like, these lifelong friendships that came out of it and these communities and these lives that were impacted. And so I always thought that would be a great story to tell, but it seemed like it was way too soon, you know, in 2015. Sure. When I was kicking that idea around, it was like, well, the show just ended. Mm-hmm. Everybody's making fun of it still, you know, like on the late night comedy shows, it's still like, you don't want to be, like, Lost and have a bad ending. Meanwhile, they just don't understand the ending. So it came to the point a few years ago where I realized 2024 was going to be the 20th anniversary and that people had kind of stopped making fun of the show. And new people were discovering the show, and with streaming, it's a different experience, and people were less mad because they hadn't spent 6 years with it. They spend 6 months with it, you know, and they don't have to wait 5 months to find out what's in the hatch, things like that. Mm. So it's a whole different beast now. I've been obsessed with the show since 2005. I didn't get into it the first year. I was a latecomer, but I was very obsessed with it when it was on TV and have wanted to make this documentary for a very long time. And things just sort of clicked into place in the last few years.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Well, how did you go from visiting the set to being at the premiere of the season finale? You must have embedded yourself in there somehow.
There is a crew member whose name I don't remember. I'm very bad with names, and I have, since COVID, I have a much worse memory than I used to.
Really?
I think I can. Yeah. I've had it a couple times, and it's definitely affected my memory the most. Anyway, there's someone whose name I don't remember, who worked on the crew. I'm guessing a gaffer, a grip, something like this, whose job it was to keep us, the fans who wandered onto set, the proper distance away from an explosion they were setting up.
Mm.
So this was a thing in season 6, spoiler alert for those who haven't finished. There's a character who's on, like, Team Jacob, who comes and then she explodes at the beach camp. And we were there and they were doing that scene and we didn't know what was going on because nothing had aired yet. And he said, you have to stand over here, you know, sort of by these trees, and you can watch from here, and we're going to do a really cool big explosion. And I was so excited. And, like, you can't take any pictures, but you can stand right here. And he said, are you fans of the show? And I said, yeah, I flew all the way from Oregon to be here for this moment. And he was like, all right, stay here. I'm going to make your week. And he leaves and he comes back and he hands me the call sheet for the next day's filming. So I'd know where they were filming so I could go dock the set again, which was really cool. And then he hands me his invitation for this screening and the like cast and crew after party that was happening. That was just for people who worked on the show. And he said, I'm not going to this. And I have some other commitment. If you email this email and say you're me, an RSVP, and it was like somebody at abc.com, right? They'll let you in. And I was like, okay, that is no way that's going to work. Like, that's what a sketchy plan. I went back to the hotel, had my laptop, fired it up, and shut off this email, like, fingers crossed, I hope this works. Like, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I will be at the after party plus one and at this screening. And I got a thing back that's like, great, confirmed. And I showed up and I gave them this fake name and they're like, great, come on in.
Wow. So, what a guy.
The screening, but then the after party was this tiny party at this like bar with great food and drinks. And it was literally just the cast and crew of Lost and me and my wife.
Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Dancing with Matthew Fox and Josh Holloway and hanging out with Jeff Fahey and like just having the greatest time. It was wild. And I wish I could figure out who that guy was. Maybe he'll hear this podcast. But I owe a lot of my obsession with the show and probably this whole documentary to this one person who was kind enough to be like, oh, you're a fan? I'm going to make your day.
And little does he know that, you know, 14 years later, you're the one that's going to be making the documentary movie about him.
Right?
Amazing how that works. At any point in the night, did the mask slip or did you have to maintain some air of a backstory and cover of you having worked on this show?
Oh, no. At the screening, I was taking pictures and asking for autographs like a dump. I was behind the rope. I just got into the space. And so I'm like,
right.
Yeah.
Like any fan. And then at the party, we did have to pretend we weren't dumb fans.
Yeah.
But, you know, after a couple of drinks, it comes out.
Right. Yeah. Of course. That's amazing.
I think it's pretty safe to say that you've had probably one of the most unique Lost experiences from a fan's perspective. I don't think a lot of people can say they've done the same thing that you have. And it's even almost even better that it happened during the show, not after many years and, you know, during everything when it was at its peak, when everything was happening. So that's insane.
Yeah.
It was definitely insane. And then, you know, looking back later now, you know, for the last 2 years, my job has been to go interview these same people, you know, hang out with the cast of Lost again and come at it from this different standpoint. I did not tell any of them that I was at that
point. That was going to be my next question. Yeah. That's amazing. You touched on it already, but I mean, it's well documented that the Lost series finale was extremely controversial with a very divisive and sometimes vitriolic response. What were your feelings towards the end? And is this something that you touch on in the documentary?
Oh, yeah. We definitely get into the ending and the response to the ending in the documentary because that was a huge moment in pop culture. Mm. You know, whichever side you've landed on it, whether you loved it or hated it, no one was neutral on it, which I think is very interesting. Nobody's like, oh, that's a okay ending. They're like, this is great, or this has ruined my life. You know, people. I think Damon Lindelof in our documentary says something like the diehard fans, you know, if they watched all six seasons and were on the message boards and listened to the podcast, they put like 1,000 hours into watching this show because people were talking about it all week in between. And so when you built it up that much, you're either so happy and relieved, you know, you're crying and you're like, that, what a great ending. Or you're so mad because you spent 1,000 hours and then it wasn't what you wanted. It wasn't what I wanted when it aired because I was always the man of science. I was going into it with well, there's got to be an explanation. You know, the island is definitely a spaceship, or it's more time travel stuff, or it's going to be, you know, nanobots and, you know, science explanations. And then, spoiler alert for you, sorry. and then it's not that, right? It's a sort of a faith-based ending. Mm. And but the whole crux of the show was man of science, man of faith, you know, mm-hmm. which way is it going to come down? Mm. And it's a little bit of both, right? There is a little bit of science there, but I didn't like that it wasn't scientifically rooted at the end, but I still loved the finale as a piece of art, as a piece of television, because I was so hooked on these characters, which I think is what the creators of the show were intending all along. And they never really wanted us to be that tied up in all these tiny mysteries. And why is there a Dharma logo on a shark? And why is there this, you know, the blast door map and all these things. And we became obsessed. The internet became obsessed with solving all these mysteries. And if that's the way you were going into the finale, that they, you know, they don't answer the mysteries, right? Mm. They just don't. That's how it ends. Spoiler alert.
Sorry.
There is an epilogue that you have to be sure to watch after it's over. That's now on YouTube, but used to only be on the DVD box set that came out.
The new man in charge. Another,
yeah, it's the new man in charge. It's like 16 minutes of just answers. It's literally like a character walks into a room and says, I'm going to answer your questions. What are your questions? Some other characters go, what's with the polar bear? What's with Walt? What's with, you know, it's like all this stuff. Fucking great. So
amazing.
But when it aired, I was crying my eyes out. I was so invested in these characters, and you know, the big reveal in the finale is not, it's not a 6-season arc reveal. Mm. It's a season 6 reveal, right? Mm. They tell you what the Flash sideways is. Mm. That's the big answer. Everything else is still a question. Mm. And I was a little bit disappointed in the what season 6 was answer. I really wanted it to be some sort of alternate dimension, mm-hmm. alternate branch in the timeline. I think we all did. And I think they were intentionally misleading us to think it was that. But, you know, in the moment watching it, I loved it. I watched it again the next day, loved it more, and like settled with the idea of like, okay, well, that's what Lost is. And I was never upset or even disappointed. It's just, it wasn't what I wanted, but you know, I watched tons of movies and the ending is not what I would have done. And that's because I didn't make that movie.
Sure.
You know? Mm-hmm. And the people I watched it with, I had watched it with a few people. We had printed our boarding passes because ABC.com was like, you can print your own boarding pass to watch the finale.
Oh, really?
Had like Dharma cupcakes. It was a whole thing. And everyone else around me hated it. All so mad at the finale. Like, so confused. And then I went on the internet and realized that a lot of people hated it, and I was so confused. Like, I remember The Sopranos had ended and people were mad about that, and I was like, but why? It's so great. Mm. Right? Because that one ends with a big question too, and I love that. And just thinking, like, why do people get mad about TV shows, even ones like Lost, where we're so invested and we care so much? It's like, and I wasn't mad earlier, you know, with like Exposé, the Nikki and Paolo episode.
Sure.
The only time I was mad, I think, was the episode about how Jack gets his tattoos.
Stranger in a Strange Land, yeah.
Only because it was built up so much, like, you're going to get the answers. The biggest mystery, what's with Jack's tattoos?
Yeah.
We're like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah. It's so interesting too, because it's one of those shows where the quality of the filmmaking and the writing is so high that even those essentially filler episodes are so incredibly compelling regardless, you know, compared to most shows that you can point to. I think that it's such an interesting thing that you say about, how the finale is all about, it's the emotion you feel from the characters. It makes emotional sense rather than any conventional narrative sense. Mm. And I think it's so, I mean, to this day, I watch it and I cry so much. You know, when you cry that you end up going, because you're just, it's taken it out of you.
I can get that way because people now, you know, we're on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and everything, and people are tagging us in all their Lost posts. Mm. I could see like a 15-second reel about the finale and I get choked up.
Yeah.
Like, it's so emotional.
Yes, honestly. And you know, you mentioned that you had this incredible opportunity in making this documentary to speak to so many of the cast and crew involved in making this show. Was there anyone in particular that you had a moment of nervousness beforehand where you kind of took a breath and went, oh boy, here we go?
Yeah. I mean, so I tend not to get nervous. It's my job to not get nervous. Right. But leading up to the Damon Lindelof interview, there were some nerves, and it was partly because it was just, I knew we only had a certain amount of time, and I had like 4 pages of questions, and I'm like, oh, we're not gonna answer. And then he starts answering questions, and he talks a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of words.
Right.
And so I ask one question, and we're like 20 minutes in. Oh, no. That wasn't so much nerves. It's just like, I've got to skip ahead.
Sure.
If we don't talk about the finale soon, we're not going to get there. And then there was another one, because I was also one of the DPs. Like, I shot the movie. I'm a camera guy. And so when we get to interview Larry Fong, who was the DP on the pilot in a lot of season one, went on to do a ton of huge movies. He's like Zack Snyder's guy who shoots these huge movies.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. But just going to his house with our little camera set up and our little lights and being like, hi, we're here to film you. You know, guy who's got 300 and Batman versus Superman. But he was the sweetest guy. But we were very nervous going in just about like our gear being kind of shitty and like our small production.
Yeah, value. That's amazing.
I'm very curious on the back of that question. I'm wondering if there was anything that you particularly remember, a specific interview or moment that you had with somebody that maybe didn't make it into the documentary but has stuck with you, and maybe you wanted it to be in, but it just kind of didn't fit with the flow or something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many of those. We did, it's like 75 interviews or something.
Mm.
And over the course of over 2 years, there's so much that couldn't be in the movie. And I'm right now editing the DVD extras for our, our special features for our digital extras and our DVD. And so I'm being able to put a lot of those things just
excellent.
Cut it and just be like, this doesn't fit in the movie, but here you go.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot of things. We did a whole thing where we handed most of the actors like their action figures and said, what do you think? And they're like examining it and like, oh, this doesn't look like me. And some of them talk, they push the button and it talks at them and they talk back. And I love that kind of stuff. It's super fun.
Yeah.
But like the movie ended up being really long and really kind of more emotional than I was expecting. And that's kind of a silly bit. So that's just something that'll be, you know, if you buy the movie on DVD or on digital, you'll get these extra things. And there's so much of that. There's like just a ton, and a lot of it too is like we interviewed the main cast, but we interviewed a lot of like guest stars and people who were just in a few episodes. And you know, they would tell these great stories about when they came to set and what their experience was like, and those don't all fit in a movie, but it's super interesting.
Oh, I see.
To the diehard fans, like, you know, Sean Whalen's story about playing Frogert in the episodes and then showing up in the show and getting shot with a flaming arrow. That's a great story.
Yeah.
But you know, I gotta somehow. So that's what we're working on right now. And it's great because of, you know, technology and the internet. Like we can keep releasing DVD extras digitally for years. So right. We're never going to run out. We have like 200 something hours of footage.
I can imagine how much during the course of you filming, how you're looking back and going, how are we going to edit this? Editing is going to be a nightmare to get this all into one film.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can I ask a bit more about like almost how Getting Lost came about and like how maybe a bit more about the process about how it was made and like your experience working on the film?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I said, I wanted to do this for a long time. And about 3 years ago, I was talking with a friend of mine named Ralph D. Apple, who I knew from his Lost podcast. We've been Facebook friends for almost 20 years. I listened to his podcast. And he hit me up one day. This was during the peak of COVID, 2021. We're all staying at home. And he was like, I need a guest for my podcast, posted on Facebook. And I said, well, I'm available. No one's doing anything. But I just did this documentary about Blockbuster Video. I'm happy to promote. Let's do a podcast. And we did. And of course, we ended up talking a little bit about Lost and, you know, the things we had in common. And it was interesting reconnecting with him. And I sort of looked him up and I'm like, okay, he did a podcast with Jorge Garcia from Lost.
He did?
So, yeah, he did a kaiju podcast about the Godzilla movies, which is great. You should totally check it out. And I'm like, oh, he knows Jorge Garcia. That's a great start. That's a good starting point, right? Mm-hmm. If we can get Jorge Garcia on board, that will open some doors. So I called Ralph and I was like, hey, I want to make a documentary about Lost. How would you like to be a producer on it? Because producing a documentary and producing a podcast are not that different. You're booking guests, you're arranging interviews, you're doing all the same back end stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was like, no.
Oh.
He'd never done a movie before. And he was like, I don't want to, you know, what if I ruin it? And I said, you can't ruin it. You can only help. I know what I'm doing. So I've done a few of these. And like a couple weeks later, he's like, okay, I think I'm in. And we started planning and we started pre-production. And this was, you know, the end of 2021. And that's how it started. And we just started making a spreadsheet of who we'd love to interview. And the list was exactly what you think the list would be. The entire cast of Lost, Simon and Carlton, J.J. Abrams, you know, all these people. And we're like, well, that's a ridiculous list. If we can get three of those people, there's going to be. And we started with the fans because we were connected with, you know, other podcasters, other big fans, bloggers who we knew because we were all in this circle and Ralph was still in touch with a lot of these people. A lot of them were still Facebook friends with me. And so we sent out these messages like, hey, we're going to do a Lost documentary. Do you want to be interviewed for it? Also, can you help? And Joe Garfine, who runs Cancer Gets Lost, which is a charity that auctions off Lost memorabilia for cancer research. She was like, yes, I'd love to be in it. Also, I know a lot of these people because they're signing stuff for my charity auction. God. So let me put you in touch with Michael Emerson. Let me connect you with so-and-so. And so it just kept happening like that. And then we would interview somebody and they'd have a blast because we're fun and we talk about Lost and we love Lost and we're not gotcha journalists. You know, we're not trying to, you know, talk about the crazy controversy stuff. We're like, hey, everybody didn't understand the ending. Isn't that dumb?
Yeah.
Like, take on it.
Right. It's all love. And so,
yeah. And so people are having fun. They can see that we're huge Lost fans and they know Ralph is a huge Lost fan because he had a podcast about it. And so word starts to spread, right? The people, you know, are texting Jorge and saying, hey, are these guys legit? And he's like, yeah, you should do it. And we, you know, we're finding out about like text threads where the cast of Lost is talking about us behind our back. Like,
wow.
And it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So much so that, you know, we set out to tell the story of the fan community and how it impacted all these people. And it became sort of like the official 20-year retrospective thing. And that was not on purpose. Like when we wrote that list at the beginning, we were laughing. We're like, ha ha ha, wouldn't it be funny? Yeah. Wouldn't it be funny if we were able to get in touch with Josh Holloway somehow and get him to talk about Sawyer? Because he doesn't, right? He doesn't do a lot of press. He just off things. Or Terry O'Quinn, who like never.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just like, okay, pie in the sky. Maybe. Like, and we'll start doing the research. How do we get in touch with these people? Where are they? You know, some of them, some people aren't acting anymore.
Mm.
And it just started to slowly grow. And then it all came into place. And then it got crazy because at a certain point we had shot 50 or so interviews and I'm editing the movie and we're, you know, because our deadline was September 22nd, 2024
right.
for a premiere because that was the 20th anniversary. That was always right. the plan. And we did this Indiegogo campaign and the fans came out in droves and supported us and we promised a premiere and we sold tickets to a premiere. So we had to finish the movie. And then it's 2024, you know, it's January, it's February, and crazy things start happening. Like that's when we hear Evangeline Lilly wants to be in our movie, right?
Like,
great, drop everything. Yeah. and then we shoot that and it's great. And we get an email in the middle of the night that's like, J.J. Abrams would like to be in your movie. No fucking way.
Like, unbelievable.
I'm also a huge Star Wars fan.
Oh, like, yeah.
Us I haven't too. Done a Star Wars documentary is because there are too many already.
Mm.
But, you know, I couldn't believe it. My mind was blown. And so now we're scheduling these interviews into the summer. And meanwhile, the premiere is still in September. And we shot the JJ interview because it kept getting postponed for scheduling stuff. We shot it in August.
Oh my what?
And I'm like editing him into the movie in real time while we're doing it in my head.
Oh
like,
god.
Right.
Because we already have a cut of the movie at this point. And that's just sort of how crazy it got. And it kept going like that even until like the movie was locked. We had done the sound mix and we heard from one more actor who was like, I'll be in your movie. And I'm like, oh, for crying out loud.
All right, just keep going.
I'm sorry. But that's how it went. And it, you know, as a fan, it was a very surreal experience for two straight years of just like, what is it this week? Oh, I guess we're hanging out with Maggie Grace in an Airbnb talking about Lost. Oh. It's wild.
Yeah, you built up so much momentum. That is absolutely incredible. Well, I'm very conscious of the time that we have left, but I have a couple more questions for you. And I'll say, I mean, I'm sure I can safely say, and anyone who has ever seen the show will agree with me, that the true MVP of Lost is composer Michael Giacchino. And I mean, myself and Stefan, we went to the concert in Hawaii earlier this year, which was
wow.
hell of a trip. We even got Lost tattoos done in Hawaii. So we have sent it. I don't know if they'll be part of the documentary, but we did send it over. You can see I've got the Hatch symbols.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Steph, have you got yours?
I think you might be.
The plane.
Oh, that one's great.
Live Together, Die Alone. And then the one you got in Hawaii, right? Which one is that?
Oh, right.
Also the Hatch 108.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think at least one of those might be in the movie.
Oh!
I
got
hundreds of tattoo submissions.
I'm sure you did.
It might be like, oh, someone else had that same tattoo. So I might be misremembering.
Interesting.
I'm pretty sure you guys might be happy. Did you by any chance go to the meetup at the church?
No, we didn't.
We couldn't make it.
Oh, because there's footage from that in the documentary.
I mean, but we got the opportunity to meet Giacchino at that record store because he was doing signings for his new album. And, you know, the concert was incredible. Not a dry eye in the place, right? Yeah. Were you there? You were there, right?
I was not there.
Oh.
No, Ralph was there and we had a camera crew there, but I had to work on something. I was deep in the edit or something like that.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah. And we went to Hawaii in February or March or something. So I had just been there. And then I just went back last week for the Hawaii International Film Festival. So there's only so many amounts of time I can go to Hawaii.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I mean, Carlton Cuse said at the concert that the score for Lost is the greatest of any TV score of all time. And that is fact.
Right. Agreed. Yeah.
What was it like to interview him? And am I correct? Did he compose new music for the documentary?
Sort of. So, it was amazing to interview him because, again, I'm a huge fan of his music in Lost, but also his career. If you talk about people who went on from Lost to do crazy things, Jesus. You know, yeah. The Incredibles, Up, Star Trek, Star Wars, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, Fantastic Four now that's about to come out. Like, he's the guy. Every Marvel movie that has that thing at the beginning.
It's him.
Like, Ryan Reynolds sings it in the new Deadpool. That's Giacchino's thing, right? And so I was nervous to meet him, not even because of Lost, but just like, oh my God, this is the guy. Like, if you know, it's like there was John Williams and now there's Michael Giacchino.
It's
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was awesome. And just, you know, his studio is amazing. And we got to do a little tour. We didn't film it because he's like, no cameras here, but it's awesome. Wow. And he did give us music. So we couldn't afford like an orchestra or anything. We asked him, would you do some music for this? And he was like, well, I can't, it wouldn't be right to do synthesizer music. Like, most people's scores now are in the box, which means it's fake strings, fake brass, fake everything. Mm-hmm. It sounds great. I mean, most movies are done in the box now, like up to a certain budget, and most TV, you know, for the past 20 years has been done this way. But he's like, but Lost was a live orchestra. I wouldn't feel right doing it this way. So like, no, I can't do it because it wouldn't be good enough. But what I can do is I can give you this music that I composed and recorded during Lost that was used for this other like documentary that nobody saw. And it kind of sounds like Lost, and it was done with a live orchestra, and it's very Giacchino, and you know, sort of take that and use as much or as little of it as you want. And so he gave us this gift really early in the process. So like, even our temp edits had this phenomenal Giacchino score in it.
Wow.
And it's just so elevating. Yes, he did the music for our movie, but he did it in 2008 or something during Lost.
Wow.
And it wasn't for our movie, but because it's for a documentary, it hits a lot of the same emotional beats.
Sure.
So yes, it's all Giacchino music you'll hear. And there's a really fun fact. We do in our doc, you've seen it in the trailer. If you've seen the trailer, we redid these Dharma videos, right?
Yeah.
With Franz Bochow, who is
so cool.
Amazing. He was so down to just put the lab coat back on and just even kept his one fake arm still to make sure that in character. And we needed music for that because, we can't use Disney music. There's lawyers about that. And we reached out to Michael. It's like, what about like a synthy thing for this? Because it's supposed to be old. And he's like, well, I can't because I'm doing this thing, which, you know, later we find out is Fantastic Four. It's like, I'm busy. Oh, okay. But my son, who's been helping me with, you know, he's done work on Batman and is now scoring the Penguin.
Penguin, that's right.
And my son has some time. And so Mick Giacchino did our Dharma music.
No way.
So, like, all the music you hear in our thing is done by the Giacchinos. And there is a brand new piece of music that was done by Mick, like in between, I think he did stuff for Muppets Mayhem and then Penguin. So it was like Muppets. The Penguin.
Wow.
Like, we're in very good company. The music is way better than it should be for a low budget indie documentary.
Right.
That's incredible. That's
how that all came together. Yeah. Well, that's amazing, Taylor. I'm going to ask you one final question. So, if you were on flight 815 and you crash landed on this mysterious island with this group of characters, who do you think you would gravitate towards, and what do you think you could contribute? And I want to ask everyone this. Luke, you don't have to answer.
I want to hear Luke's answer. Yeah, that's a great question. I think in terms of contributing, I'm pretty useless. Like, I can't build a fire. I don't know how to hunt. I'm certainly, you know, I see people in TV shows that can like track. I'm doing air quotes for the listeners. And it's like, I don't know. I'd be like Sawyer, like, yep, there's my favorite leaf. You know? I don't know. I can't. I'm not a nature guy. I'm an indoor kid. And so as soon as there's no indoors, like, I guess I would be very good at sitting at the computer and pushing the button. Right.
Right.
I could contribute that. I'd be like, you guys go outside, get sunburned, you know, exercises. I'm going to sit down here, listen to records, and push a button every 108 minutes.
Yes.
That sounds good. Yeah.
That's what I would be up for doing. But then that's, you know, a time-limited job. The real answer, because I've heard variations of this question before, the real answer is I would do what Rose and Bernard did, which is just ignore everyone else. I live on a tropical island now. Some kind of shelter. Use one of these Dharma bunkers as a house. Freaking food falls from the sky.
Yeah, like, honestly.
You don't have to do anything. So why is there so much drama? Just like, yeah. Like, let the people run off in the woods and fight their epic battles over good and evil. Meanwhile, I'm cool, you know, and eat coconuts and
the perfect existence
the in the hatch.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Amazing,
yeah.
Amazing. What about you, Steph?
You know, I wish I could give you a cool answer and say that I'd be like a Jack or John or something, but I think realistically, I'm more like a Boone, where I would, you know, tag along to some sort of excursion because I think I should contribute, but I'm not sure if I should. And I would die on that excursion.
Yeah.
Would never see me again. And I'd be dead in the first season. That's it. I'm gone. But, you know, it's the heroism which counts, right?
Dude, I am with you on that. Yeah. I mean, for me, the answer to this question depends on my favorite character. And that is unquestionably John Locke. So I think I would hang out with him, which, like you, Steph, will lead to a Boone-type situation where I would die early because he'd lead me down a crazy path. I wouldn't be able to contribute anything, absolutely nothing, because I'm a man of the modern world. And without my creature comforts, I'm useless. I think I'd try to attract the attention of Kate, but she would be so besotted with Sawyer and Jack that I would give up and sulk for a few days. But I do see myself hanging out with Hurley and Charlie. I think we'd have a good laugh. Luke, do you dare to venture an answer to this?
I can attempt an answer. But, you know,
go for it.
I'm having to search my memory a bit here, but okay. I think maybe similar to Stefan, that like I like to think I'm a bit of a Jack or a Sawyer, you know, quite independent and strong, but maybe realistically, wait, who was the bass player, like the musician?
Charlie.
Probably a bit more like him or Hurley, you know, like keen to help but a little bit useless.
We all think we're Jack or Sawyer, and then when push comes to shove, that's amazing. All right, well, I think that about wraps it up. Honestly, Taylor, I mean, I could continue talking to you about Lost for much longer. But as mentioned earlier, Getting Lost will be making its UK debut at Phoenix Cinema on 2nd of November. And Taylor, you'll be in attendance for a Q&A afterward. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's my first time over to the UK. I'm very excited. Going to be there shooting a commercial project. And so we scheduled it so we could be there. We'll do a Q&A. We also have an exclusive. There is a little bit of a DVD extra that's focused. We did 3 interviews in the UK that didn't make it into the doc. So there's a little UK angle to it. Shines a little bit of a light of some of the differences, I think. Maybe it's more for American audiences to see, you know, like Lost was broadcast and then you had to pay money in the UK. And it was just a crazy thing. And they had this weird promo, the David LaChapelle thing. It was crazy. and we don't know that in America, so maybe you guys will be bored with it, but I put that in there so there'll be some extra content. And then after the premiere on the 2nd that I'll be at for the Q&A, which sold out rather quickly, we do have two more screenings at the Phoenix that do still have tickets left, I think. The second one might be sold out. The third one I know still has tickets. And then that's it. It's leaving theaters and it's, you know, going to be gone for a while, and then it's going to show up digitally for everybody, hopefully by the end of the year. But keep an eye on our social medias and stuff for that. But the best way to see it is in a theater. I've been to a few of these now, and just Lost fans getting together, and people are dressing up, and they're, you know, people are writing Not Penny's Boat on their hands.
Their, you know, their lots of props. Dharma folk.
Lots of Dharma folk. It's just cool. It's like we used to do, you know, at the Comic Cons in 2006. It's just, and it's fun. And you get to see people that you haven't seen maybe in 15 years, or your old Lost buddies, or whoever. So I think if you can make it to see it in a theater, you know, it's not playing in a lot of theaters, but if it happens to be playing at one that you can get to, it's just a really fun way to see it, because it's, you know, it's about this community, and then you see it with the people who you used to watch Lost with. That's, to me, that's the best way to experience it.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Completely agree.
Excellent. Well, I hope you enjoy your time here in the UK. As you said, the first screening is completely sold out. The screening on the 8th, that's the one you're going to, right, Steph?
That's right, yeah. I'll be there on the 8th. Yeah.
Excellent. And I've booked my tickets for the screening on November 16th. I cannot wait. Taylor, congratulations to you. A huge thank you for your time. I wish you all the best with this film moving forward and for all future endeavors as well. And again,
good luck with everything, yeah.
Yeah, as a Lost fan, thank you for putting this together.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. And I do want to throw out one other thing. If you have tickets for the 8th or the 16th, but you're in London, come hang out after on the 2nd. There's going to be an after party at a pub somewhere. I'd love to say hi to people, even if you can't, you know, make it to the screening on the 2nd because it's sold out. Let's hang out, you know, grab a pint. Is that what you guys say?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right.
I thought that was only for those going to the premiere, but now that you've thrown it out, I'll see you on the 2nd, hey?
Yeah, I'd love to meet you guys in person. So
amazing.
Oh, wonderful.
All right, folks.
And thank you again for doing this. And I know you're sick, so I really appreciate your time during, you know, it's not fantastic being sick, but thank you for making your effort to come
out. Back to bed.
All right, folks. Well, that's all for now. As always, a big thank you to Phoenix Cinema for allowing us to discuss all that they program. Luke, thank you, as always. See you on the next one, sir. Stefan, a big thank you to you for joining us today and for your music for the podcast. And our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson. As Parting Words by Michael Giacchino plays us out, in the words of Jacob, it only ends once. Anything that happens before that is just progress.